everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It is episode number 154, I think, for Friday, October 4th, 2013. So I'm going to say welcome back, but I'm really just talking to myself. Welcome back to the show, me. I'm Phil Nickinson, editor of AndroidCentral.com, if it's your first time joining us. And apparently these other guys over here... Oh, I put it the wrong way. These guys over here did a couple podcasts in my absence last week, which is pretty awesome on a number of levels. Good job, guys. Hats off to you. So I'm going to take the rest of the year off, I think. So, no, that was awesome. So let's just go through everybody, introduce ourselves. Jerry Hildebrand from the site.
Hey, what do you say?
I try not to. Andrew Martinick.
How's it going, everybody?
And Alex Dobie in England.
Hey, everyone.
So, no, seriously, you guys did... Where was I last week? I don't remember.
Doing cannonballs in swimming pools.
No,
that was this week.
That was this week. Where was I last week?
Atlanta?
I was somewhere on Thursday. And then Friday... Thursday I took my kid to a concert. That's what it was.
Oh.
I was in Biloxi, Mississippi, or Biloxi, depending on who you ask. And I took her to her first concert. It was kind of cool.
I spent a week there one night. It was horrible.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd want to spend a week there. It's not like Pensacola, just not as nice. And then Friday, you guys did the Note 3. So, Thursday you did the G2. I'm sad I missed that. Friday you did the Note 3 special podcast, which I missed intentionally because I kind of couldn't talk about it. Because we respect embargoes. And I don't know. You want to talk a little bit more about those two things? Well, not so much the G2, but I want to hear what you guys think about the Note 3, especially Andrew, now that he's got it. I used it for a long weekend. Well, no, I had the Note 3 for about a week and a half. And then we'll talk about the gear a little bit, which Andrew has now and which I used for a long weekend. So Note 3, I liked it a lot. It's still too big for me. It's just not my kind of phone. But I thought Samsung did a really good job with it. I mean, TouchWiz is still TouchWiz. The gallery sluggishness is ridiculous. They got to fix that. But I think it's a nice phone.
Yeah, well, I want to hear Alex's like rehash of his, because now we
you
have
me
a
to
full
rehash my rehash.
Yeah, full on Well, we did the podcast, so you kind of rehashed that, and then you did the full review. So,
yeah, I mean, I'll give you the short version, which is if you want a big phone, this is the best big phone, and that about sums it up. The main reasons not to buy this are if you just can't deal with the extra form factor. It's a 5.7 inch phone. Limited to how much you can use it with one hand, and you could even argue it isn't really a one-handed phone. So, yeah, it's going to be for the portion of people who want that extra screen space and for whom, the extra lack of pocketability and the difficulty with using with one hand isn't so much of a downside. They've crammed a lot of stuff into there that makes a lot of sense with the kind of device that it is. They finally got around to, I think, working out what they want to do with helping people use the S Pen when they get it out for the first time. The Air Command thing is really useful. They've just got it's the third generation. They've got a really, really solid big phone. And it seems like that they finally hit their stride in terms of what they want to do with this form factor.
Yeah, I think I can agree with you on the stylus points, pardon the pun. I'm not really much of a stylus person, but the way that they did the Air Command thing, when you just take the pen out or hit the button, it's so much more elegant than sliding you over to the default launcher or to the default page in the launcher, and it lets you work anywhere in any app and not, throw you all over the place. And the way that they're doing the handwriting recognition, where you can just hover it over in any text field or most text fields I've found, and it'll pop up a handwriting thing rather than having the Samsung keyboard enabled.
That was really cool. I was actually, I don't know about you, it's going to depend on everyone's handwriting, but I was really surprised how well that worked.
It works really,
work for really well for me. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I scribble and it worked on the Note 10, so I was impressed.
As far as the overall size, I think you nailed it, that it's probably the best big phone, but it's still a big phone. I was sitting in bed this morning and catching up on all the notifications overnight, and to one hand, it just couldn't do it. I had to sit up, and once you get two hands, then it's a great experience, but it's good. But once you, when you're trying to reach over, across the screen and pull down the notification shade one-handed. It's just frustrating.
It's a bit awkward. If you're used to a device you can get in your hand and not have to stretch at all to reach the notification shade, it's going to be a step beyond that. It's not too bad. I can kind of reach the notification shade if you're holding it flat like this. You can sort of reach up the top. It's a little bit awkward, not ideal. And you would want a second hand to be able to do that.
Well, I think it's improved as far as you have a little more grippiness on the back of the phone and definitely, on the sides of the phone, that it's a little easier to kind of balance in your hand and, you know, not worry about dropping it as much when you just pull it out of your pocket, you know, when you're walking down the street or whatever. And I think the overall design, it really goes back to kind of the Galaxy S2 design, which is kind of nice, a little more square, and the camera pod's very similar. But I think that it's a little less slippery, and I think anything in that direction is a good improvement.
I want to mention the screen as well, because that is a huge point on this phone. The difference from the S4 to this is pretty striking. Just extremely bright is the best way of putting it. You've always had the very vivid colors and the very deep blacks with AMOLED, but this, it just seems like they've got the overall brightness level up to where it needs to be first to be able to adjust realistically indoors, but also to be really solidly useful outdoors.
Mm-hmm. Good, because that was, you know, let's face it, that was a sticking point. Even on the S4, you can't use it out in the sun.
Hang on. I thought we were supposed to hate Samsung.
Are we supposed to hate Samsung?
You know what? I've got a list 5 pages long of reasons to hate Samsung. If you want to hate
them. Yeah, we can get into the bad stuff too, but that doesn't mean there aren't good things here. Oh, there's a lot of good stuff going on here.
I wish I liked these oversized phones, because it's really not. It's just too much phone for me. I don't want something that big. That doesn't mean it's bad. Doesn't mean I hate it.
After seeing, you know, what you had to say and what Alex had to say about the Note 3 and playing with the Note 10 myself, I want a Note 7.
Bad. The Note 10's really nice.
I
spent more time with that at the briefing I went to in New York last week. As they were going through like all the features, and so the guy's showing them to us on the Note 3, and I was using the Note 10. I like the Note 10 a lot. Again, I think that's more tablet than I want, and I agree. I kind of want a Note 7. I think I would have to force myself to use all the S Pen features just because I'm not used to them. But I mean, they're really nice. Like you said, they work really well. On the Note 10, I want to be able to trigger Air Command with my finger.
Yeah,
not necessarily.
You need a button on your finger, Phil, to press.
I know.
But then again,
do I have any of those nibs? I used to have those nibs just laying around from an old S Pen or something. I want one like embedded out of my finger.
I don't know that we would have enough fine grain control with our finger to find
no.
a lot of that stuff useful. So I can't complain too much.
It's nice. I like it a lot. It was fast. Let's talk about the gear for a minute. I think you guys want to move away from the Note 3 and are we done with the?
Alex or Andrew still has a little bit to write about one, but I think we can move on.
Yeah, let me back up. I used it, when did I get it? I got it on Saturday, and then Sunday I headed down to Miami for editors' meetings. We all get together once a year. So that's why we didn't do a full review, because I didn't get to use it that long. But I think I used it long enough to get a pretty good feel for it, and I think Andrew and I are probably on the same page. But I want Andrew to do like a full good review and really talk about the software and how it works, especially in conjunction with the phone, because I didn't really get into that at all. But like, it's nice. It's people worried that it's big. I've been wearing a Pebble for a couple months, and I didn't really think it felt any bigger than the Pebble. I think the bigger difference to me was in the bands. The Pebble just feels better. It's more flexible and not as rigid, and it has, you know, what are those called there? Joints?
It has a standard watch band hinge.
It's more comfortable. So I didn't think it was too big. My biggest problem with it was the notifications, that anything that's not the stock email app or stock messaging, or there's like one or two, you know, when you get a call, you know, you get a little icon that just says Gmail, and that's it. And then to see the notification, you would have to tap it, except the Gmail, you know, the notifications don't work on the watch. It says, hey, go check them out on the phone. And to Samsung's credit, it will, you know, make the phone bring up that notification, you know, open that app automatically if you want it to. But still, I want to be able to just
it doesn't it doesn't open to the message that you're notified about. It just opens the app.
Right.
It just opens Gmail and or Hangouts. And so I got the Gear Wednesday morning afternoon. And so yesterday was my first full day using it. And I still haven't I use Google Voice, so I don't use the stock messaging app. And I use the Gmail app, and those are where a vast majority of my notifications come in, Hangouts too. So I haven't, you know, in my natural use, received a normal notification that I can actually see a preview or act on the Gear. And that's not that crazy of a thought. I mean, people don't use Google Voice, really. I mean, in the real world, people right. don't use Google Voice. So you'll get text messages, sure.
And a lot of people use the stock email app, especially if you're on corporate mail. You need to test it and see if it works with something like K9 or football. I bet it doesn't.
It doesn't even work with – so it works with Facebook and Twitter. It'll give you it won't give you a preview, but again, you'll get a buzz or a chime and a notification.
Well, yeah, no. I mean, that to me, that's like not working. That's like
right.
having an – I think Alex said it
but
right
there. Are,
it's like having an LED on your arm.
Right, yeah. There are a lot of apps where it doesn't even get the chime or the vibrate. So, like Facebook Messenger, I know does not. So there's this weird disconnect where I'm still kind of trying to figure out what the best way to go with it is. Well, my phone vibrates and my wrist vibrates and makes a noise. So do I silence the phone and leave the wrist? But the watch doesn't get every notification. So even if I did want the glorified $300 LED on my wrist to blink when I get something, it doesn't even pick up for a basic notification for everything. So
I think the solution to this problem is just that you don't buy this watch.
Right.
You know, I hate to say it, but I agree.
So right now there's so many cool things about it. I'm already enjoying the media controls are really cool. It's mm-hmm. you can set it up so it's one swipe away from the watch face. So your pocket, you know, watch is on. You have your headphones in with your phone in your pocket. You can just swipe and you can adjust volume, playback, and it works with anything. Right? It just like Google Play Music or Pocket Cast or whatever you use because it's just like an inline mic remote. So stuff like that, the pedometer is cool, changing your watch face is cool, but you know weather on your watch is cool, you can see the forecast or whatever, but $300?
And here's the thing, everything you've said that's useful there, the Pebble already does.
Boom.
Right. So for half the price.
Now, yeah. Hang on. We do need to mention that this is a full Bluetooth device, whereas the Pebble mm-hmm. is basically just a display, right? I mean, with the Galaxy Gear, you can receive a phone call. You know, you swipe down on the bottom mm-hmm. of it to accept the call, and then you're talking mm-hmm. from the watch, which is pretty damn cool. If you get a voicemail and you actually can use the voicemail in the messaging app, you can respond to that with S Voice when S Voice isn't being wonky. So, I mean, that's a lot of functionality just right there. That the Pebble mm-hmm. doesn't have. It actually, have you made a phone call with it? It's
yes,
fun.
I have cool. made and received a phone call. I just got a notification, so that's what happens. It just says Gmail 1. Okay, that's great.
All right.
So phone calls. I have received and made phone calls, and so the person on the other side, it sounds like you're on speakerphone, or you yep. have them on speakerphone, which is exactly what it is. It has two mics on the side, and the clasp on the bottom is the speaker. So it just sounds like you're holding your phone out in front of you like this.
How are you holding it when you're speaking? Are you going like this? Are you putting it up here?
I was actually just on my computer and just had my arm sitting on the desk. So, yep. you know, the distance, you know, just like as if I answered a phone call on speakerphone with my phone on the desk, and it sounded fine.
In the briefing I was at, we were all walking around like this, like we're in the Secret Service or something, and we quickly figured out the reason for it, even though Samsung's like, you know, you don't have to hold it like that because the microphones are, you know, on this side and on this side. But our problem was, especially where we were, it was a little noisy. We had some doors open and would go out on the patio out there to make a call, and the speaker is down here. So while these microphones are omnidirectional and you know they pick up all sorts of stuff, the speaker isn't. So you got to be able to hear it. And I'm not sure if I just didn't have the volume up all the way when I tested it then, or if it just wasn't that loud.
Is there a headphone jack on that thing?
No.
Okay.
No, I mean, it's already a Bluetooth device.
For a lot of people, calls are useless then, because I may not want everybody around me to hear what's on.
Exactly. And I made phone calls just like sitting at my desk, quiet setting, and the quality was just fine. Just in the same way that I'm not going to walk down a busy street on speakerphone because I'm not going to be able to hear the person and they're not going to be able to hear me, I'm not going to do that with the watch either. I'm not going to do it in a public place either, because you're kind of just, you know, if you're sitting at a restaurant or something, it just doesn't work. You're not just going to blast sound out, you know, out of the bottom of your wrist.
No. We need to send you down to, like, Pike Place Market and have a film crew just follow you and have you start making phone calls and see if somebody tackles you because they think you're crazy.
Exactly. There's plenty of crazy people down there.
Somebody in a blue uniform arrests you and wants to know what you're doing.
Right.
Just walk around.
But now there's one thing that does that none of the others out there so far do, and that's that cross your legs ladies watch or camera right on the band.
Right.
Now we laugh at it and we make jokes, and I just did, but for a lot of people, that's a cool little thing to have on it.
So I think that the idea of the camera is cool because it's simple. It's just one, you know, you lift up your wrist, one swipe, and you're in there and you can take the picture. My issue with it is that right now, all you can do is you have three options. You can delete the image, you can transfer it to your note to share, or you can hit share. But share is grayed out unless you have one of the few supported apps that'll share directly from the watch. I was really hoping when I saw that share menu that I could hit share and it'd share via the phone through any app, but it has to be a supported Gear app that you have installed.
Hmm. Well, but the other thing it can do is you tell it to automatically transfer the picture from the watch to the phone, and then it's in the gallery and just share. That's not a huge deal, but I get what you're saying.
But then I have to pull out the note, wait 30 seconds for the gallery to load, because that's how long it takes.
Oh, God.
and then fixable
by software.
Right.
Right.
So, that's kind of the story for everything on this, right? It's all fixable by software. But it still needs fixing. This
doesn't excuse the fact that there's so much that's janky about it out of the box.
Right.
But we got a system dump off of that thing, and I was pouring through it. It's basically running Android just like a phone.
It's running 4.2.2. Yeah.
Yep. So
which is in and of itself impressive. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot that can be improved or completely rewritten for the thing.
Hey, Jerry mentioned ladies crossing their legs and the creep shot factor because the camera is right here and you're just pointing it out and you can kind of slyly take pictures. There is a shutter sound on it and you can't turn that shutter sound off without hacking into it. I assume somebody's going to be able to root this thing just like normal. I don't know why they couldn't. So you can't turn that sound off, but what you can do, and I tested this, is you just put your finger over the microphone holes and then tap to take the picture, and you can't hear a damn thing out of that.
Or you can take a needle and stick it in the speaker hole and just pierce the speaker, and it'll never make a sound again.
I'm glad they put the shutter sound on it, but it's not like that's going to stop bad things from happening.
Right. There are plenty. Yeah. Go ahead.
You know, I mean, again, you're going to need to be around some a-hole who's going to be taking pictures like that. So.
And on the flip side, there's a whole lot of ways to take creepy pictures that don't cost $300. So.
Honestly, I tried taking pictures, like, not on the sly, but like kind of tried to imagine what it would be like. And for all those guys out there whose butts I shot, I'm sorry. No, it's you still feel conspicuous when you're doing it because you got to like hold your arm up and position it and try to see the screen at the same time, and people can see the screen around you. So I'm not overly worried about that.
It only is more conspicuous than taking out your phone and taking a picture because so many people just pull out their phones and, you know, walk around like this with a note or a heaven forbid, a Nexus 7 or a Nexus 10 or something and take pictures, size tablet. So that's the only reason why I think it looks more conspicuous. But, I mean, sure, you can lift up your wrist and kind of fumble around with your watch and it doesn't look too weird. But, you know, nobody else is lifting up their wrist to take a picture. So the kind of movements you're doing, you know, most people with a normal watch, they're not fumbling around on their wrist. It just they look at it and it tells them the time.
Yeah, it's conspicuous.
So how are you finding the convenience factor with pictures? Because they were saying, I think in my briefing, that it's designed so that you can take quick pictures without reaching in your pocket of the phone, but of course you got the reduced image quality. So you guys who have used it, is it worth that?
I don't, as I said, with not being able to share directly, you have to send it to the phone, which then shares it. You're going to have to take your phone out at some point. It kind of has that quick, you know, it's always available, two swipes or one swipe away factor as far as taking, you know, just taking it up, taking a quick picture, 1.9 megapixels, and they're all kind of washed out. I mean, we've seen, I've posted a couple on Google Plus, and Phil took quite a few.
I didn't post the ones I took at a kid's birthday party that Saturday, just because, you know, pictures of little kids who aren't mine, I don't need to be posting. But, you know, it has sort of the light-dark contrast problems that so many other phones are having right now. And, I mean, it was fine. It was cool, but it wasn't great. But if I took a picture like that, I would still feel like I missed the picture.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And that's important.
Yeah.
When the difference is so great from the camera on the Note, which is pretty much the same as the S4s, it's a really good camera, and this little poxy 1.9 megapixel thing, then yeah, you're missing if you've you're missing shots. You're not capturing
it. Wait. So. You called it poxy. Bravo. Yep. Just bravo, because that's exactly what it looks like.
You can think about the quality as lower than most modern front-facing cameras on the Note or the S4 or, you know, whatever else. And just in terms of resolution and just general quality, it's just not that good. So I would say that the slight increase in convenience or quick capture ability isn't worth the degradation in quality.
Now, one quick question before we walk away from the camera. Can you share with the chat on application direct from your wrist?
I would have to sign into chat on and create that account to make
the reason
that work.
You can't share with Google Plus or with Dropbox or with Twitter. We can't knock Samsung for that. That's because those apps haven't been built to run on the gear yet, or maybe never at all. So, you know, on my reasons not to hate Samsung list, I want to make sure I scratch off you can't share from the gear. Because that's
right. So let's talk about the apps then, really quick.
Interesting. I thought I want to hear what you're saying.
So you have to have your phone connected at all times, obviously, and you're running a Gear Manager app, and in there you can fiddle with the default. They call them apps, but they're just the default system things like the pedometer and weather and stuff like that. You can go into a Samsung App Store through the Gear Manager, and you can sideload apps. They download them onto your phone, transfer them over Bluetooth to your watch, and there's notably like 30 apps in the entire App Store.
Might be more. It seemed like more to me. I was actually pretty impressed by that, especially when you look at how many different fairly big name companies they got on board to begin with. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I called Jerry later. I was like, they've got their own App Store. They're building it out right now. They're being quiet about it.
So yeah, some of the big ones, they have Pocket, which is a big one, which I'm not sure exactly what you would do there. They have fitness stuff, they have those Runtastic, MyFitness, Pal, or whatever. Evernote, Path, let's see.
And this is all retooled for the Gear, downloaded through Samsung's thing. And in fact, when you download the Gear Manager in the first place, you're not downloading it from Google Play. You're getting it.
That's important.
You touch the dock with the phone via NFC, and that's what launches it. And that's you're downloading it from Google, Samsung.
Well, the reason you're doing that is because it's an app that installs other apps. Then you can't do that on Google Play.
Good point.
So I think that the reason I would say it's about 30 apps, just because a lot of these apps are duplicated between categories, which is why it looks like there are a lot. But you have, so in terms of messaging, so that's like kind of what you would be able to share the app, or pictures from the camera app. Path, Snapchat, which is probably a big one. Kakao Talk, I know that's a big group messaging service. There are Facebook and Twitter apps, but they seem a little janky. I'm going to try them out, like swipe through and show one tweet at a time or one Facebook post at a time, which is kind of interesting. But, you know, so there's a lot of watch faces. That's one of the cool things that you know, you can do on the Pebble too, but there's a bunch of different watch faces you can download, and they do all kinds of crazy stuff because you have a full LCD screen. You don't have an e-ink display.
The display is nice, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Was it 360 by 360? You know, 1.6 inches, but it's nice. It's not bad.
And I think that can be said about most of the general hardware build of it. It's mm-hmm. it's made really well. It's made so it feels like maybe like a $150 sport watch or something, plus all of the electronics inside, which is probably why it's $300. But it doesn't feel cheap.
How are you finding the battery life factor?
So yesterday, didn't do a lot of crazy stuff on it. Some pictures, I have the pedometer running all the time, the weather and all the notifications and things. I went to bed with 70% battery life left.
Hmm.
So, but the watch was no more than 3 feet away from my phone the entire day either. So it wasn't strained or anything like that. And I've turned on the wrist flick. So when you lift up the wrist, it turns it on. And I have the backlight set to like 30 seconds or something. So it's on quite a bit. I think you can give a nod to Bluetooth Low Energy for that. You can give a nod to the notifications stink so you don't use them. I don't know. And but yeah, the battery life is pretty good.
Yeah, I thought it was better. That's you know, you were using it more already than I did. But and it does warn you when you turn that wrist flip thing on that it's going to use more battery because mm-hmm. the motion's on the whole time. But yeah, I mean, even just the few days that I used it, I could probably get 2, maybe 2.5 days out of it, which sounds longer than what they were telling us. The other concern I have, and this, I don't know if I think there's a little bit of a discrepancy between what they told us in the briefing and the technical spec of it, but the waterproofing, they basically told me, look, you can sweat on this thing, anything else you want to take it off. You know, don't take it in the shower, obviously don't take it in the pool. If it's raining, you probably want to slip it off.
The tech specs say something different though.
Yeah. So, which really made me worry about it a little bit. So I don't know. Maybe I
should have a look into the manual or something and see what that says.
You still have that kit, the phone dunking kit? We can find out.
I have plenty of cups I could fill with water, but.
So I don't know. All right. So, after a couple of days, Andrew, would you buy one of these?
$300, no.
Yeah, me either. I would get a Pebble. I want to try some of the other watches.
You want to hear something crazy?
What, Jared?
Go ahead.
10 minutes ago, my answer was no, but really? I've heard a couple of things that now my answer is maybe.
I'm going to buy one, at least till we have one, or maybe if you want to use it, I'll buy it and send it up to you.
With the fact that I wear a watch every day and I just appreciate the look of this watch and just watches in general, if it was less than $300 and it worked with more than the Galaxy Note 3, I would be interested in it. But given those two things, those are the two issues. Because otherwise, I don't think that there's no reason for this product to exist or anything like that. I'm not going anywhere near that far. It's just its current proposition is not good enough.
See, that's what keeps it a maybe and not a definitely, is I understand that it probably will only ever work with Samsung devices. That's a good business move, and for their software team, that makes things easy. But show me it working on the S4 and quickly, Samsung.
Supposedly that's this month.
Yeah.
The thing that brings up for me, though, is that there's still a market out there. There's still a need out there for a really great, if not cross-platform, at least something that supports the whole of Android that does this sort of thing. And we're hearing all kinds of rumors now that Google is possibly going to have something running on KitKat. That wouldn't surprise me at all. And if they can do that, and if it works across their entire ecosystem, which is the whole of Android, and if they can tie into the things they sort of seeded in 4.3, the notification stuff, the listeners, Bluetooth Low Energy, because I'm sure that's why they're there, then that's going to be a big deal for them, I think, and possibly a reason to get that instead of the gear.
Yeah, hey, but finish, and then I want to.
I was going to say, you can bet that Google and Apple both have plenty of Galaxy Gears in their engineering offices, and they're doing everything they can to tear them down.
Yeah. Before we move off Samsung, and I hate to do it, we got to say something about benchmarking for 90 seconds.
Over 9,000.
All right, look. 6 months ago, Brian Klug and Anontech said, hey, look at this. Here are some phones that are obviously benchmarking higher than they're supposed to be. He broke that story 6 months ago. And lo and behold, this week, it's almost as if people knew exactly where to look. And sure enough, the Note 3 benchmarks higher as well. So I wrote kind of a, I didn't mean to be quite as snarky as I was, but the point of the editorial I did late the other night was we, and when I say we, I mean us too, because we used to, you know, it used to be the first thing we'd do. We'd get a phone and run to do benchmarks because they were easy posts to do. You could do them on video and people loved them and, you know, it was done. I think we're a little bit to blame for this game in that, you know, we see which ones benchmark higher. And I get that. I get how benchmarks can be useful. I think what the guys at Anontech do with benchmarks is good. I think what the rest of us do, and you know, not everybody, but a lot of us, and what I did with them was not good. You know, when you just blindly look at this number without context of what it means and why you need to know those numbers and how they can help you, I think that's what fed into this. So now you have Samsung, and they are not the only manufacturer by far. Brian and Anon did a really good post, I think on Tuesday maybe, forget when this week, saying here are a bunch of phones we've tested. Here are the ones that are juicing things up a little bit. And honestly, I'm still on the fence on whether it's cheating. You know, on one hand, yeah, I think a benchmark app should, I think a phone should strive to run itself in a benchmark app the same way it would reproduce in any other app to produce more accurate results. And I think more fair results, I guess. But at the same time, I don't necessarily blame the manufacturers for saying, here are these apps that supposedly tell how good these phones are. We want to run as well as possible when somebody's using those apps, right? I kept coming back to some weird Olympics metaphor of you know you're going to be timed in the Olympics running a race or something. Why wouldn't you run as fast as possible? It's not the world's greatest metaphor by any stretch. But I mean, that's my take on it. I mean, for me, benchmarks, I don't care. I get that a lot of people do, and I get that a lot of people find them important and useful. And I actually got a couple really good emails from people explaining why. I'm not letting Samsung off the hook. I think it's important to understand this stuff, and I'm glad Brian and Anon broke the story 6 months ago and continue to now. But, I mean, I don't know if it's outright cheating. I don't know.
It's not cheating because it's by design. If you want to benchmark something and you use a piece of software to benchmark it, software is adaptable, period.
And that's why I dug up that old post you did back in May, you know, 2011. And it's a little apples and oranges. But
a little, but if some hillbilly can do that at his desk because he's bored, imagine what the engineers at Samsung can do to game benchmarks.
Right. Well, in the thing in the editorial I wrote, I mean, I remember sitting there in a bar in Hell's Kitchen with Omar Khan and some other ex-Samsung engineers after the original Galaxy S event. And I had the Droid X event, the Droid X in my hand because it had just been released like 4 days earlier, and that's what I was using. And they said, ooh, how does it benchmark? I mean, I vividly remember that. They wanted to see benchmark scores on that. So they've been paying attention to this for a long time, guys. It's not new. And you know, I'm glad we're paying more attention to it, and I think we understand them better and understand that maybe they're not as important if the manufacturers are mostly gaming the system. You know, the context is good.
It's the case now that actual responsiveness and performance has got so disconnected from benchmark results in a way that wasn't necessarily the case 3 years ago.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I mean, the S4 is a perfect example of that. It had a few flaws when it launched, but the benchmarks were amazing. So,
benchmarks don't make your gallery app run well.
No, we know that for sure.
Neither does T-Mobile. Hurry, T-Mobile. Update my phone.
So that's all I wanted to say about that. So if you haven't read the Anontech piece on that, I absolutely recommend it. That is by far the best thing you can read on this whole thing. And
nailed it.
And if you want to run benchmarks, my God, run them. Fill the forums with your screenshots. A lot of other people love them, and we're not going to hate you. We're not going to make fun of you.
We still love you.
Right.
I'm not making fun of anybody now. I just, you know.
You're just listing your reasons why you have your position, and I'm glad because I happen to agree this time.
This time.
Right.
See, we don't always agree, folks. Where else do you want to move? Should we talk about HTC? Poor HTC.
Let's talk about HTC.
Okay.
First, the good. Somebody talk about the good.
Start with the good.
4.3. We have it, sort of.
Sort of.
On the HTC One on Sprint and the US developer version.
And AT&T now.
And AT&T next week, and also Canada. So there's that.
Oh, Canada.
Even more important, I think, is how transparent they've started to be. Now, I want to temper that a little bit. So Jason McKenzie, I know Jason, not a little more than in passing, I guess, president of HTC Americas, or America, good guy, nice guy. So he's been going on Twitter, for the last week or so, keeping everybody abreast of these updates, and, flat out said, look, some of these are going to hit the end of September deadline. We kind of put it on ourselves. Some of the U.S. ones aren't. And then the next day, they're like, oh, wait, here's Sprint. And today he said, here comes AT&T next week. I like that transparency. I'm a little curious why it's Jason doing it and not HTC proper. I have to wonder if he can get away with saying things without them being lawyered, that they might have to be in a more official capacity. But, it's not like he's unofficial.
I like to picture that he's got a big wooden glass of rum, and he's saying, I'll say what I want on Twitter.
Jason's cool. He's a big, well-spoken guy, good-looking man, strapping man. I can picture him doing that stuff. And you guys know the frequency stuff I've been doing, where they, sit down and we talk off the record and very candidly. And he's been extremely open with us in those meetings, and we don't always necessarily get the answers we want, but he's been open about it and really has lent a lot of context to this stuff, and that's important.
Yep.
I think, and it helps us cover things better, and it helps us understand them better, even if we don't agree with it, even if we think it sucks, and believe me, the updates weigh on those guys as much as they do us waiting on them. It's not easy, but
one really good thing that the transparency is doing is it's people are realizing more the path that these updates take. And in the past, it's never again, I'll never buy a Samsung phone. Or this year, it's HTC never updates their phones. Well, this gives us a chance to see that, okay, the manufacturers do update them, and then the carriers do things that they feel they have to do, and it takes time.
And it's a very subtle way. If the US developer version gets it end of September, then they're saying, okay, as Jason McKenzie did today, it's past AT&T certification. Even though it's being said very gently that those 2 weeks, it's HTC's delay. It's AT&T's delay, not HTC's.
Right.
And it's a valid delay. They've got to certify for the network.
Sure, things take time.
With them, sure. Not HTC.
Two weeks, nobody can complain about 2 weeks. And if Verizon takes 4 weeks, you still shouldn't complain as long as it's good when they're finished.
Well, yeah, that we'll see. I'm excited to go back and use the HTC One for a little while. I moved back to it a couple weeks ago. And I forgot how much I like that camera. I really do. But you know what else I remembered this week? Because I took Nexus 4 with me. I forget why. I think I took it just to do photospheres. And I want Photosphere on everything.
Because
everything.
It's fantastic.
Everything needs Photosphere. And here's the other thing. Because I took the G2 with me, I think Google's implementation of it is easier and better. Maybe I'm just not used to LG's new one. I don't know. But I got better results out of the Nexus 4.
Samsung's is pretty good on the Note.
Ooh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
I haven't tried that yet on the Note.
Surround shot or something like that.
I'm mad I forgot to try it because I knew it was there and I just totally forgot.
That's pretty cool. They give you a little rotating globe that fills in as you fill out the image.
Yes, surround shot.
And it's just on the Note 3, right? It's not on the S4?
Just the Note 3 right now, I think, yeah.
All right, maybe I'll get one and take it with me to London next week. We'll see.
We'll get you your gear and your Note 3 and you'll be sporting around London.
I'm not dragging the gear anywhere.
Get them both in pink. Come on, Phil. Things.
Let's talk the bad about HTC.
Yeah.
So they announced their first operating loss for the third quarter, $101 million operating loss. I had Chris Humiestowski, who does a lot of our stock stuff. He's a financial guy. He understands the stuff in ways I never will. And the piece he wrote today basically said, look, this isn't surprising. They warned us about it, and we knew that. The funny thing to me is that they announce a $101 million loss, and the stock goes up 1.5%. It's like, I don't get that. Okay. I mean, they've already started cutting back staff, and that's never a good thing. I mean, Chris would argue otherwise from a financial standpoint. You know, my newfound respect for people who get laid off. You know, I can never say it's a good thing, but I get it from a business standpoint. And I still don't know. My thing out of all those stories when it happened was I don't know if HTC was so fat, if they had, you know, just positions that were taking up space. I have no idea. My thing is, and I've always thought it was kind of a slippery slope, and maybe Motorola's gotten a bit of a pass since we all love the Moto X right now, and we tend to forget how much money they were losing.
Still losing.
Right, exactly. Like, you know, I just haven't thought about it because we've got this really cool phone in our hands.
Well,
and the difference is Motorola has a safety net, whereas HTC currently...
Right.
HTC is a...
Exactly.
So we could go back to buy HTC.
They already have one. They already have one handset manufacturer, and we can go back and look at Google's earning reports that they break out Motorola, but they've been losing tens of millions of dollars every quarter.
Yeah.
Anyways, so I mean, this is just. I mean, sure, the stock price can go up because they're expecting a larger loss than what happened, and that's what happens when they warn ahead of time, is the stock's going to dip before it actually happens. But $101 million loss,
that's a lot of money.
It is their first loss, but it's almost three times the amount that they made on the second quarter. So if you think about it that way, they made about $40 million in the second quarter, and they lost over 100 in the third. So... everybody loves to do the doom and gloom talk and say everything is going to end, but it's their first loss. It's not a long string of losses or anything of that sort. So we're not quite to that point yet.
I think what people are worried about is the long-term aspect of it.
Right.
Because they've seen HTC coming out with these great phones this year, and they've still had manufacturing issues. They've had setbacks, and they've gone up against... what I think we all probably agree in the S4 isn't as good a phone, and it's sold millions, whereas HTC still struggled to compete in that market.
Well, and I think Chris had a good pull quote in his piece today where he said, you know, HTC's problem has never been the products. It's everything else surrounding it.
Now, we've been saying that for how long?
We say that, but none of us have been one of the unlucky ones who got an HTC device that had a big gap behind the screen, or it was filled with dust, or the speakers didn't work, or the
camera was off center. I had to send back an HTC One, the first RMA I've ever done on a smartphone.
So because I had
a microphone that didn't work.
HTC has had a lot of manufacturing issues as of late.
So, I think a lot of manufacturers have quality control problems, though.
But I just know, I feel sorry for the people that get stuck with them, whereas we do device reviews. Ours didn't happen to have all these problems, so they read everybody on the internet's got a great one, and mine is broken.
It happens more than you would think, because all of us who review phones tend to kind of talk to each other, and we'll bounce things around each other, and it's not uncommon for people to get bum review units.
But what we do is we send them back and get one that's not a bum and talk about the right one.
And you should do that if you pay for it. That's what the RMA is.
Yeah, correct. You know, we get all these questions. Well, my phone's messed up. It's got a dead pixel. What should I do? Take it back! You paid for it!
Right. And, well, that's how it works with all these manufacturers. They are never going to get quality control down to 100%. And they know that it costs more to try to get it lower than it is. At some point, they're okay with a certain margin of bad units because, RMA in them is cheaper than getting those processes down to that lockdown state. So it's hard to say what, on a countrywide, international-wide level, what HTC's quality control looks like compared to Samsung, LG, and everybody else.
And there's a reason the design has evolved as things have gone on. With the Mini, where things are a little bit different on the front, it's easy to manufacture because you've got the plastic bits on the front as opposed to metal. So they're refining things as they go along, and I think it's probably true, just looking at the One Minis that I've handled and used, that they've got that sorted out as the year's gone on.
Before we walk away from HTC, Phil, let's talk about Microsoft.
I don't know, man. I don't know what to think about that. I still think people are crazy, but go ahead.
I a moment of rage. The first thing I read this morning when I got out of bed is Microsoft wants HTC's Android phones to dual boot into Windows Phone. Microsoft, who the hell do you think you are? I want Nokia phones to dual boot into Android, and until you do it, you suck.
Well, and they're giving an extra incentive of not having a large licensing fee if they let their phones dual boot Windows phones.
And that's what put me into the rage, because I would much rather see HTC stand up as a company and disclose these licensing agreements that they're not allowed to by law. Say, screw you, Microsoft. Here, Mr. Public, here's what's going on. And we find out a little bit more about what exactly is happening. I don't know.
It's not without a hint of irony for, you remember the PC days when Microsoft wouldn't allow machines to go out there with dual booting on it to any other OS, and now they're effectively going to one of the bigger manufacturers and asking, you know, hat in hand almost for them to give a dual boot on upcoming Android phones.
And it's
the other thing that was reported was that apparently what's behind this, and this was only one of Bloomberg's sources saying this, that HTC has apparently given up on Windows Phone and doesn't plan to release any more standalone Windows Phone handsets.
Well, that goes right back to, you know, right when Microsoft announced that it was going to buy Nokia. We all thought that that was going to happen. Samsung and HTC have literally no incentive, as if they had much incentive before, to make Windows phones. And so
particularly HTC, because
particularly HTC
situation in Samsung it's a drop in the bucket. HTC, it's money they can't afford to waste.
Right. They'll spend $101 million on R&D to build a Windows 7 or Windows 8 phone.
I'm not buying this.
Good.
I wouldn't put it past them to do something weird, because remember ACC did one of the first dual booting. What was it? It was... I just totally forgot what it was.
They did? A phone?
Yeah, it wasn't a phone. It was the...
the Windows CE ship.
Windows 95 or 7.
Like a UMD.
They've done all kinds of crazy crap.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. This thing was awesome. I mean, it was this big. That was back in the good old days. So, I mean, I can get them doing some weird, crazy stuff.
What I don't understand about it is why Microsoft wants that muddy brand message of having a dual booting phone and how that's some kind of value add, when they could HTC or whomever else with the same proposition, but say, we'll cut your licensing fees if you make Windows phones, rather than we'll cut your licensing fee for a dual booting phone.
I'm not sure if that
doesn't make any sense.
People won't buy the Windows phones, but more people will buy the Android phones that dual boot.
Yeah, what it would seem to me is that they're trying to piggyback. HTC is making Android phones anyway. Yep. It seems like Microsoft is trying to piggyback on that because, yeah, the product's going to be there next year. If they can negotiate their way into it, that's a foot in the door, and that's them effectively gaining market share when, you know, through people who might not even be using their software.
Well,
but I just think, Phil saying it might not happen. I don't know whether it will happen or not, but I do know it is a very bad idea. Dual booting has never given anyone a really decent mainstream user experience, and phones are one of the most mainstream devices we have. And it's going to be the most confused if HTC's big flagship next year. I mean, apart from anything, what do they put on the box if it runs both? What do you have on the render?
And what does that mean, the market share? I mean, does Microsoft really gain that much market share when, sure, they'll ship 2 million phones that dual boot Windows Phone 8 or whatever and Android. But what if for 3/4 of those people never boot into Windows Phone? What does that mean?
Do with it?
My dad's
not going to go buy a Windows Phone app that,
I've got to have that exclusive Windows Phone app that isn't available on Android, so I'm going to reboot my phone into that.
It's one of those things that if it weren't Bloomberg reporting it, and we've heard some whispers to the effect that HTC might be working on some of this on the engineering side as well. If it weren't for those two things together, it would be easy. This would be the kind of crazy thing that you would just dismiss.
Right. This sounds like something that came from Digitimes.
I don't know. I want to hope it's not going to happen, but I mean, they're both in kind of a strange position, so who knows what'll end up.
if it happens, I promise I'm going to buy one and sequester myself in a locked room somewhere until I find out how to take Windows off that damn phone.
Well, my hope is that something is getting misconstrued along the line and they're looking at making one generally identical phone that from the factory line comes off and they split it and one runs Android and one runs Windows and they do something like that, because that the whole dual boot thing makes literally no sense.
The dual boot was what we heard, not the whole factory splitting thing.
I'm hoping that it's misconstrued along the line of getting sources that's what's going on. But I mean, that's just me being hopeful that they wouldn't make a mistake.
That would maybe be the more sensible way of doing it, at least less confusing than one OS on two phones, which is just going to confuse the hell out of any normal consumer. So, who knows?
That's all I have to say about that. Insanity. Jerry, I want you briefly to talk about this malware thing this week. So an Android, an official Googler, somebody who knows what they're talking about.
Right, the head of Android security.
Was speaking in Berlin, and I read this a couple days ago, and I thought it was really interesting. So explain to me what he said.
He gave a big speech in front of a convention in Berlin that has to do with malware on your computer, both your mobile and your non-mobile computers. The real thing to take away from this is all the reports you hear about all the rampant malware that Google can't catch because it's not in the market, and Android, you're allowed to install apps from just anywhere, and it's insane. Turns out that when you look at the actual numbers, less than 0.12% of those apps are actual malware. And then if you dive a little deeper, 40% of those are things that users wanted to install, like root explorers or things that will flash recoveries. So 60% of 0.12%, somebody who's good at math can figure that out, are actually installed malware that people are sideloading, which is a vastly different cry than we hear from these vendors who are saying, 5 million people downloaded this Hello Kitty app that has SMS spam. Maybe 5 million people did download it, but when you look at, the 1.5 billion Android phones or devices out there, it's still a tiny, tiny percent. What got me the most excited is real data, real numbers. That's what I have been screaming for. That's what I want to know, because this, any malware is a problem. But I wanted to know just how big the problem really was. And quite frankly, I can't trust people that want to sell me a product to clean up the malware.
Now, and to be fair, this is somebody from Google saying it's not a problem.
Yes.
People who sell products because they say it's, I'm on board with this guy.
He showed me some data. That's why I'm going to believe him, because if his data is true, what he's saying is true. If they're faking the data, next week I'll be here just cussing Google like a dog, but I don't think they are.
Yeah, I'm okay. It's still not a problem, but like Jerry says, it was good to see numbers. Mm-hmm. Really good to see data. Anything else? Android 4.3.1 is coming out for the LTE version of the Nexus 7. Have no idea what's different in it. This is the one that I think the last time I was on the podcast we were talking about, I had pulled one out of the box and stuck in my AT&T SIM and it would tether just fine. Anyone who had updated to a later version couldn't tether. This update still does not allow me to tether an AT&T for what that's worth. In fact, you don't even see the option at all now. So, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't know anything else that's new in it, right?
No.
Nope. It's 0.0.0.1 beta.
If you're on the beta track for Twitter, it's gotten another pretty significant UI update. So they moved some things around. I'm not crazy about it, especially because like mentions and at replies are in a different place now, and you can't just thumb over to them. That's not cool. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of that, so we'll see. Action Launcher has a big beta going on right now. Action Launcher 2.0, which is my favorite launcher. It's what I use with Chris Lacey. Really good developer. To be honest, this is the first beta that I've uninstalled, and I think that's not the fault of Chris, I think, or the app. It's just, you know, it's buggy. There's stuff going on, but it's real beta.
Yeah, it's a real beta.
I think it's a really good reminder of this is how beta is supposed to work, and you need to, you know, pay attention and know what you're getting into. Right. I'm guilty of it as much as anybody else, right? Beta, that means early. Cool.
Well, reminder time. Once a beta is well enough that we think it's cool for just anybody to install and use every day, it'll end up on our list.
Right. Well, yeah, I did put Action Launcher on there, but
oh, you did.
I did.
You just shot my whole list to hell.
No, hey, I sent out a message yesterday. You were off, so that's not your fault. And I didn't realize that's how we were doing it. So my fault. it's a good reminder, I think. And I don't know what the line is between alpha and beta. I'm not sure there should be a line. I think we need to take a little responsibility. And it's, you know what, it's easy enough to leave a beta track if you want
sure.
to. So it's really interesting what he's doing, though. If you haven't played with it, go see the post. Go watch Chris's video where there's some really neat stuff going on, and I can't wait to see it when it's a little more stable, but especially because I'm traveling, I need something stable right now, so I roll
right.
back.
It was something like a launcher. It's kind of it's still something launcher. You interact with all the time.
Yeah. So, yeah. Anything else you guys want to talk about? Anything going once? Chat room? I didn't get the Q&A module going this week, and that's my fault. Sorry, I totally forgot because I haven't done this in a week.
Oh,
2 weeks.
Let's talk about Moto X camera updates really quick.
Okay.
So,
it's a little better. It's still not as good as the HTC One or anything Samsung has. It's better. We were just talking. I think I'm gonna leave mine on HDR all the time still.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just getting better results. But look, I mean, I've been taking a lot of pictures with it, even the past week when I was using the soak test and couldn't talk about it, but could get away with it because it didn't, you know, actively say that, hey, this is from the updated version. And, you know, I'm still getting some really good shots a lot of the time. I think I'm okay with the Moto X at this point where I don't want to carry around a second phone for a camera. I think. It's not as good as the other phones.
Because before, it wasn't like that, so...
Right, but I like the rest of this phone enough to make up for it. That's my take.
And Jerry's had the update for a little while. I just got it on the Sprint version, like late last night or something. I haven't had a chance to do any big comparison shots, but what
did
I've
you buy
seen,
one, or is that review unit we still have?
I still have Sprint review unit.
Okay, yeah, send that back soon, will you?
The only reason I was holding on to it is to see the update and see what the camera shots look like.
Fair enough.
I still do not have the camera update for the phone that I cannot buy.
In Colombia, you can buy it now. Just letting you know.
That's not very useful to me, Jerry.
Well, just letting you know.
What do you think Alex would do if I showed up with one in London next week? I think he'd come down.
Give him the Sprint one, just so he can't actually use it.
Does Jerry want to give up his developer edition? If we'd done this right, I would have ordered one.
If you give up Jerry's developer edition, it'll have his hand attached to it that you had to saw off at the wrist.
Sorry, Alex. I don't know if I can get that through through security. Sir, there's a hand attached to your phone. Ew, that'd be gross. All right. I got one email. You want to do this one email I got? It's kind of a good one.
Sure.
Ransom writes, so I was thinking back to the Android 4.3 Nexus 7 keynote and seem to remember hearing about new features announced for Android being the improved synchronization between your tablet and phone for notifications and games, as well as making in-browser payments and checkouts easier. Am I missing something? Where's all this stuff?
I was just thinking about this with the calendar update that when you swipe away notifications, this is... a couple months ago, that you swipe away a notification for a calendar event, it would clear. And obviously, we have like a million devices connected to our accounts at any given time. I cleared a calendar notification, and it went away on like 3 phones and 2 tablets that were powered up at the time.
Hey, this is a Google Play Services thing, isn't it? Not an Android thing?
It's the application has to be rewritten to support it, but
right,
yes, okay. It's all... And that's the thing. Google's apps are, I think they are almost all there. Google Voice, of course, won't.
Mm-hmm.
But Hangouts and Google Plus and Gmail.
Hangouts are still doing it.
Well, so Hangouts only clears in the same way that Gmail does, because it has like red receipts, so it'll clear the notification because it's been red.
Okay.
Which is kind of like how like Facebook Messenger will clear because you've read it on one. But in Gmail, just because it's just like IMAP, you read it somewhere else and it clears. But
and don't forget your HTC or your Samsung calendar app isn't necessarily going to be right up to date with that either, because it's not stock Google.
Right.
And as far as games go, I was kind of been thinking about this too. You know, that's a Google Play Games thing where the apps have to be written to, have your Google sign in to synchronize. And I've seen a lot of games that do leaderboards and achievements, but have you guys seen a lot that synchronize game states?
Riptide GP2 does it.
Yeah, Asphalt 8 does it, I think. It's kind of janky in the way that it does it.
But you're correct. Most aren't doing it yet, and I don't know why.
Don't know.
And then what? Oh, and the in-browser payments and checkouts—that was a whole Google Wallet initiative that they've been doing for a while. To just have that's a partnering with sites. That's they have to partner with sites to have that checkout and micropayment thing set up.
I was somewhere here recently, and it was just a some sort of small hobbyist shop. It may have been like a comic book adventures book thing, or a parts something. It was very small, and the guy, and it was an iPad he had, but I signed in with my Gmail account and paid for my purchases through Google Wallet. Have no idea how it was done. I asked him. He had no idea how it was done either. He said his IT guy set it up for him, but lo and behold, it came out of my Google Wallet balance.
Cool.
So it can be done somehow. It may have been a browser on the iPad that just... do they have a kiosk mode on those things or something?
Yeah. Well, it's probably similar to, you see a lot of places use the Square card readers with an iPhone or an iPad.
Something.
Same thing, but you're just signing in instead.
But I thought that was really slick. I was a little bit nervous about signing in on somebody else's device with my Gmail. Mm-hmm. But, I gave it a shot. We'll see.
I think that's going to do it. Trying to think if we got any weird, inside news, any site news. So I was in Miami all week doing strategery with the other editors. So I'm excited about stuff we have planned. It's going to be a lot of work. It's going to be a lot of different changes and weird stuff. But we are forging ahead. So I'm more excited than ever about working here and doing this for a living. I hope you guys are too. Alex and Jerry and Andrew.
Certainly.
Yep.
I said, I hope you're excited about working here.
I love working for you, Phil. Yeah.
A little better. I mean, let's not talk crazy there, Jerry. But no, so some really cool stuff going on. I guess I probably won't be around for a podcast next week. If you guys want to do one now that you can, awesome.
We're going to do it.
Sweet. Maybe I'll hop in. Away, I think I'll be in an airport.
The film is a way where we'll say whatever the hell we want podcast episode.
It'll be just Jerry and Alex, maybe, so I'll be at Big Android Barbecue as well.
That's right. Yeah, I will possibly be traveling back from London, so.
Well, then we won't be doing a podcast. Well,
we could do podcast, it could do some kind of phone-in from the Android Barbecue to Jerry and
through the gear camera.
Exactly.
All right, so we'll see. So you guys hang out, and if you hear from us that we're doing a podcast next week, cool. If not, maybe take the week off. So yeah, Andrew's going to be at the barbecue next week. I'm a little jealous, actually. I'm sad I can't go.
I'm told that there's quite the food experience that's going to happen.
Yes.
And Android stuff.
What, is this your first trip to Texas overall?
Yes, actually, first trip to Texas.
Just take long Texas sleeves and long pants.
Yeah, the food experience, though, you're going to love food.
It's going to be awesome. Yeah, I'm definitely
jealous. I'm a fan of food.
Cool. All right. Well, if you want to email us like Ransom did, do it at podcast@androidcentral.com, and we'll have the Q&A up and working so we can do questions live next time. I promise. Well, somebody remind me anyway, and then I'll promise.
Phil, next time.
Find us all on Google+. It's probably the best way. just search our names, Jerry Hildenbrand, Phil Ninginson, Alex Dovey, Andrew Martinick. Best thing you can do. We're on Twitter as well if you care about that. As we are every week, we are brought to you by shopandroid.com. You can call 888-468-6158 or go to the website, because I think the website's a little cooler than talking to people. Who wants to talk to people? I don't want to talk to people.
Not unless you have a Galaxy Gear and you could talk to them on your wrist.
I can't wait to talk to somebody on the Kindle Fire.
I'm jealous of that website. I always tell the store people, like, I want that feature, and that's pretty cool, too, and I never get any of it. Maybe one day. So, cool. That's it, I guess. Andrew, Alex, Jerry, thank you. Chat room, thank you, guys. Everybody listening at home, thank you, as always. It's Phil, awesome. I love hearing from you.
We love working for you, Phil.
I never get tired of hearing that. All right, well, we will catch you next time, and we'll let you know when it is. Thanks again. See ya.
See ya. Later.